God, the way the Torah way, 600 week. Thank you, Dudi Iskovich, for your amazing organization skills. And you should be zeichet to all good things. And good given show. Chof Zayin Elul, 18th of September. Rabbi Leibish Hellel, Heller. Hilchas Lulav.
I know it's a bit, it goes against the feeling of the moment, the intuition. Everybody's prepared for Yom for Rosh Hashanah, and they're deeply immersed in very advanced levels of tshuva. And here we're going to talk about Hilchas Lulav. But the truth is, Rabbi Isai, that Rosh Hashanah is not only one of the 10 days of tshuva, it's that as well. The 10 days of tshuva begin with the first day of Rosh Hashanah. But we refer to the days of tshuva as Yom Shebein Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, which means that Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur have their own identity, besides from being part of the 10 days. And the definition, the true essence of Rosh Hashanah, it's a time of Kabbalas Oyu Malchu Shamayim. Meloicha Lo Oilam Kulei Bichvoidecho. The psukim of Malchus are a means of declaring HaKadosh Baruch Hu's dominion over the world, and that is something that precedes tshuva. That's something that precedes tshuva. Tshuva follows from that. The acceptance of a Kaddish Baruch Hu as the ultimate authority is what Rosh Hashanah is all about. And part of that acceptance is to seek out what is the Ratzon Hashem in any given area. And the Torah says that we should be Yosef B'Hilchas Achag. So therefore, it is appropriate as a means of preparing for Rosh Hashanah to actually learn the halachas of Lulav. So what I'd like to do today, Rabbi Isai, is to go through some of the basic concepts of how to select a lulav. And maybe the things I'm going to share with you are common knowledge. But from my experience, I've seen that there are people who sometimes, you know, can spend a significant sum to buy an esrig. And because of a lack of awareness in one of the pratim hilchas lulav, the whole set of the alav minim can be not kosher without them realizing it. So I want to cover three or perhaps four topics. One of them is what's called in the Mishnah Niktam Roshay. Another one which is mentioned in the Gemara, which is called Nechlaka Hatiyoimis. And the third one is the shear of Lulav in proportion to the Hadassim and so on. So the Mishnah mentions that one of the things that passes Lulav is Niktam Roshay. Niktam Roshay. If its head... the head of the lulav was snipped off. If the head of the lulav was snipped off, then that passes a lulav. The problem is, we don't know what the word roishay refers to in the lulav. What's the head of the lulav? And we don't know what it means to have it snipped off. How much of it, what's considered niktam, is another question. Now, there is no mucker anywhere in Shas that gives an absolute clear definition of what the roishay of a lulav is. Tosfos says that it would make sense, Hoyanira, to say that we know that the lulav has a shedra. A shedra is a spine. The spine is the place from which all the leaves come out on the side. Now at the top of the spine, there is a leaf that comes out from the top, as opposed to all the others that come from the side. Some lulavim apparently, Bimei Chazal, had two leaves coming up from the top of the spine, and all the others come on its side. Says the Tosfos, it would seem that if this is the shedra, the Gemara refers to this as the shedra, then the roish of the lulav are the two leaves that come up on top of the spine, not from the side, but from the center of the spine of the lulav. That's the roish. And if that was niktam, then that would pass through the lulav. And what niktam means, we'll have to revisit. But whatever niktam means, if this part of the lulav was niktam, it would pass through the lulav. The only problem is, Tosfos has a problem with this. There's a Gemara later on where the Gemara discusses what happens if Mitzlo HaTiyoymes. Tiyoymes, literally, and translated, could mean one of two things. It could mean the twins, or it could mean the point where they become Tam, Tmimus, where they become one. But we see that the Gemara later understands the Tiyoymes to be the middle leaves. And over there we say, Nitla Tiyoymes, what's the din? If Miktam Roishoy is already discussed in the Mishnah, why would you have to say, talk about Nitla Tiyoymes? And therefore, Tosfos suggests another possibility, that maybe the Roish of the Lulav is not the central leaves that come out from the middle, from the top of the spine, But the Reish of the Lulavs means all the Alim al-Yoinim, all the upper leaves. All the upper leaves that make it to the top of the Lulav, all of those are considered the Reish. And only if the majority of them have been compromised, will it become possible mitzad Niktam Reishoy. And according to this Pshat in Tosfos, Niktam Reishoy is a very unlikely psul. You're unlikely to encounter a Lulav that is possible mitzad Niktam Reishoy. And the Mechaber paskens like this. And therefore, Sephardim don't have a major concern with this halacha of Niktam Reisha. They have no reason to look to the middle of the lulav. And even if the middle of the lulav, the top was clearly snipped off, it wouldn't pass on the lulav because the top is just one of many. And the Reish is comprised of all of these upper leaves, not necessarily the central one. This is the psak of the Mechaber. However, the Ramos says that we are Cheshesh, that we should be chayshish for the other opinion. That is the middle leaf that is the problem. And therefore Ashkenazim should look at the middle leaf and see whether niktam reishit. Now what does niktam mean? How much of it has to be taken off in order for it to be considered snipped? So one shita that's brought in the Torah is the Bala Itur. The Bala Itur says when you talk about chopping off a head, chopping off a head means that you take off the entire head. It has to therefore come down all the way to the shedra. It has to come down all the way to the shedra in order for the lulav to be possible. If it was taken down even three quarters, we do not apply the klal of rubei kekulei, presumably because the word niktam makes this an exception to that rule, and the psul is not that it's missing its rush, but that the rush was niktam, and niktam would be only if it comes down to the shedra. That's the shita of the Bala Itur that's brought in the Torah. The shedra means to the very bottom of the leaves, where the leaves meet with the actual spine, where there's no longer a split. So again, according to this shita, it would be very difficult to make a lulav puzzle. However, Tosfos, when he poses his question, and he says, why does niktam reishoy, how does niktam reishoy mean the middle, if the Gemara later discusses nitla hatuyoymes, these middle ones were removed, if that's already in the Mishnah, why would the Gemara discuss it? Tosfos poses the question in the following way. The Gemara later says, if they were removed, are they kosher? If the Mishnah says that being snipped makes them possible, then certainly, by means of a kal v'chomer, being removed entirely should make them possible. We see from this Tosfos that niktam is not the equivalent of removing it entirely. Because if it was removed entirely, then Tosfos wouldn't say it's a kal v'chomer. And therefore, there are different opinions. There is an opinion that says that even if the roiv was removed as possible, and there is an opinion in the Rishonim that says even b'mashu. The word mashu means even the most minuscule amount. So you have a lulav with a very pointy tip, and you know you're doing it in the sukkah and it hit the schach, and something so minor was removed that you wouldn't even be able to identify it. It would seem that if there is something that was removed from this central leaf, this middle pillar, the roish, that's called niktam. The Reish has been compromised, and it passes a lulav. L'choira, that's what the Ran says. Other Rishonim, the Rosh, bring a shita that even b'mashu. And in the Ramah, that's what we are choishish for. That even a mashu passes on the Reish, which is the center point of the lulav. I just want to point out the following. Before we continue, let's understand the following Rabbi Isai. It's very basic and fundamental for Hilchas Lulav. That there are two types of psulim in the Dalet Minim in general. There are two categories that of disqualifying any of the Dalet Minim. One is a psul midin hador, pre-Eitz hador, and we apply that to all the Dalet Minim. It has to be hador, and sometimes hador renders it psul. Not to be confused with the common terminology, you have a mehudar dike estrik. The word hador is a baseline minimal hador, where if you don't comply with that level of hador, then your estric is possible. So there could be a certain amount of black spots, for example, if they're within a certain closeness to one another, that doesn't make the little estric a not nice estric, it makes it a possible estric, because it's not hador. So that's one type of psul, and then there's another type of psul, which is referred to as tamus, complete. If it's incomplete, if the completeness is compromised, that can also make it possible. Now there's a fundamental difference between these two categories. Rabbi Isai, hodor is essential to the whole definition of the esrik. of the lulav, of the hadas, of the harava, and if it's not hadar, then that psul carries for all the days of Sukkot. That psul carries for the entirety of the Yom Tov of Sukkot. There's no distinction between day 1 and day 2 and day 3 when it comes to a psul that is based on hodor. But if the psul is that it's not tam, which we darshan the Rishonim of the Gemara from lekachtem, ulekachtem lochem, lokachtam, lekichotamo, that it has to be evident that it's complete what you're taking. If it's a problem of tamus, then Chazal said, "Ulakachtem lochem b'yoyim harishoyim." Tamus is only a problem b'yoyim harishoyim. Tamus is only a problem b'yoyim harishoyim, the first day of Sukkot. So we always have to ask yourself, when something is possible, is the psul a psul in tamus, or is it a psul in hidul? And if it's on day 2 of Sukkot, the psul of tamus can be ignored entirely. Doesn't apply at all. But hodor does apply. Now as it happens, contrary to what you and I perhaps would have thought, this Niktam Roshoy is not a psul in Tammuz. Perhaps with regards to Tammuz, we consider the middle column to be present, even if it was compromised on top. We go Basaroy. The problem is Hidur. Just like an Esrig has a Choytem, the top, the Pitim, the area around the Pitim, or the higher part of the Esrig, which has higher levels of stringency, a higher standard of hodor than the rest of the esrig, the same stain, the same spot on the bottom, wouldn't pasul on the top, could sometimes, yes, pasul. The same is true for a lulav, and the highest point of the lulav, the roshi of the lulav, makes it not hodor. And therefore, this is a 7-day or an 8-day psul. It's not a 1-day psul.
Is hodor a psul in the way it looks, in the appearance?
Oh. L'choira, hodor is to do with the appearance, but it's Chazal's definition of what constitutes a compromised appearance.
I'm not sure.
Oh, very, very good. Very, very good. So I was just going to point out, even though the Paskim bring the word mashuhu over here, one could suggest, and I think it's a fair suggestion, that the mashuhu has to be a visible mashuhu. Has to be a mashuhu that's near a line. Because since the psul is a psul in hodor, if it's literally indetectable, it's not mistaber that it should not be considered hodor. But that, I haven't seen that clear either this way or the other way, but I think the svara is noisen like you're saying. There has to be a detectable mashu. In other words, there's no quantity as to how much has to be missing, so long as it's evident that something is missing, even if it's literally a something, then that's a problem. Okay, Rabbi said there's another shitta. The Ravid is of the opinion that the term lulav does not refer to the leaves. The leaves are an extension of the lulav. The actual lulav is the shedr. You need the leaves for hodor, you need the leaves for side purposes, but the leaves is the shedr itself, and therefore when you're talking about niktam roishoy, it's the shedr that was missing something, and only if the shedr is missing something does it become possible. And therefore, again, this would be very unlikely for that to be the case. You'd have to have somebody drilling into the bottom of the lulav to make it possible. According to the Ravid, for example, even if all the leaves went dry, if the shedr is not dry, and we know that once something is dry, it's considered to be non-existent, as if it's not present, says the Ravid, your lulav is still kosher. Because the alim are not needed because they're essential to the lulav, they're just needed because they beautify the lulav, and that they continue to do even after they're dry, and therefore the Ravid says that's kosher. But that's the shit of the Ravid, which is not with the shit that we go with. So just to summarize, Rabbi Isai, Lididan, according to the Ramah, the Katkhila, a lulav, should have its point entirely uncompromised. And if it is, so certainly if it's evident, even if it's the most minimal amount that's been removed, that passes a lulav. That passes a lulav. Okay, let's leave this, move on to the next point. And that is the discussion of Nechlekah HaTiyoymes. Now the word tiyoymes, I've told you, could mean one of two things. It could be miloshen to'omim, to'omim, twins, or it could be miloshen tam, complete. What is this tiyoymes? What is this tiyoymes that the Gemara discusses, nechlekah tiyoymes? So again, we have the Mechaber and the Ramah, based on different opinions in the Rishonim, what is the tiyoymes? So for example, the Rambam and the Rif, they learn that the tiyoymes is the place where every leaf, the side in which they become one. On one side, when you look at the leaf, you see that they're two, and on the other side, they have this part where they're folded, and in that space where they meet, is their tiyoymes. And nechlekah tiyoymes is once again telling you that if the majority of the leaves of the lulav, right? So if the lulav has 30 leaves, if 16 of them are missing their tiyonis, and each one of those tiyonis have to be missing in its majority, so it has to go down beyond 50% from its point to its root, then that's called nechlakot tiyonis, and that passes the lulav. So once again, if you're a Sfardi and you're looking for a lulav, the middle is not relevant, and you'll be hard pressed to find the pasul lulav on the basis of nechlakot tiyonis. However, here again we have other shittas in the Rishonim, and they say that the word tiyonis actually does not mean where the leaves meet, where every leaf has its fold, where they become one, but that in a lulav there is a twin. There are two leaves, each which is comprised of two, and these two are Siamese twins. They come together. And like I said earlier, once upon a time, apparently in certain regions, there were lulavim that had two leaves coming out from the center. These two leaves were stuck together, like Siamese twins. And that's tiyonis. And that, if it's nikla, if it's not the case, then it's possible. So the Rishonim all say, if this is the pshat, and the goyim bring such a pshat, then we can hardly find the kosher lulav. They say 1 in 500 will have this twinning in the middle of the lulav. How could that be? So there are different suggestions. One suggestion is that it doesn't have to be that way, but if it was that way, and you're thinking to yourself, listen, my lulav is a strange lulav, I want to make it look like everybody else's lulav, I'll cut it down the middle so these two can be split, that would be the psul. And if that's that, then once again, nechlakat tiyonis does not apply nowadays. It hardly exists. You never find such a lulav that has two in the middle that are stuck together, and you would go and divide it. But the Beis Yosef brings that perhaps what the Goyim meant was that these two leaves are not actually stuck together as one. Two double leaves, so you have four halves that are growing together as one. What the Goyim meant was that you have this brown type of coating that brings it together. And that is what you should maintain. So this is the Beis Yosef that brings what nowadays is referred to as kore or moich. I'm not sure if you're familiar with what I'm talking about, yeah? That brown thing that's on top of the lulav. So many people remove it. And some people, there are some keilas that actually see it as a preference because of this mitzvah. That's considered that the tiyonis is perfect. It's uncompromised. Now there could be another psul underneath that you're not aware of because you haven't seen inside, but you can be soimach that it's not the case because of Gobas Aroy. And this is considered a very together lulav and it's fine. There is that shitta. There is, however, another shitta Rabbi Yisai, which again the Ramah brings, and that is that the Allah emtsoi. We combine both opinions here. We're not talking about the majority of the leaves, we're talking about the middle leaf. But in the middle leaf, we're not talking about Siamese twins where two leaves came together. We're talking about a single leaf, and that leaf must be complete. That leaf cannot be compromised where it meets. Where it meets, it has to be the tiyemis, the tam, where they meet and become one, that has to be maintained. How much of it has to be maintained? How much of it? So Lemaisa, the Ramah, even the Ramah who's Machmir, says that you need the majority of it to be maintained. Or at least it shouldn't be the majority of you was breached. So in order to make a lulav posel on the basis of nechlakat tiyonis, you would have to split the middle one past 50% of its length. That's also very unlikely and very uncommon. Where you have a lulav where the middle one is split past 50%, in order to make it possible, that's what the Ramah says, and that's the halacha. The Ramah says, Yirei Shamayim, Machmirim, Mahadrim, B'mitzvahs, are medaktik, they're choshish for the other shita that says that even B'mashu it shouldn't be compromised. But, if you want a possible lulav on the basis of Nechlakat Yoimis, you'll be very hard pressed to make it possible, because it would have to be split beyond 50%. And the top does not chumra, A, and B, this psul of Nechlakat Tiyomis, Rabbi Yisai, is not a psul hodor. This is a psul in Tammuz. It's missing its Tmimus, and it's Tammuz, and that is only day one. So day two it can actually be split down all the way to the bottom and it will be kosher. It's only on day one that the middle one matters. So I'm pointing this out because people go to buy a lulav and they're very hung up about what's happening on the top of the lulav, the middle leaf on the top. Is it split? How much is it split? Is it split b'mashu? You're talking about a chumra, a machmirim from a hadrin, which is wonderful. But your lulav is not going to be possible on that basis. And even so, it's only on day one. There is, however, another psul in a luluf, which, from my experience, many people aren't aware of. And this could literally passel lulavim every day. And that's the following din, Rabbi say. It's negel lemaisa. Every person who puts together a luluf and esek has to know this din. And I would venture to guess that in the Beis Medrash in which you daven, there will be at least one person who's unaware of this din, which is sad. So we have to let's understand the following, Rabbi Yisrael. What is the shear of a luluf? What is the shear of a luluf? The Mishnah says a luluf should be three tefachim, kedei l'naneya, so that you can shake it. The Gemara brings the memory that a luluf has to be four tefachim. So the Gemara asks, how can you tell me four tefachim if the Mishnah said three tefachim? Says the Gemara, the Mishnah should be read as follows: the shear of a luluf is three tefachim. You need an extra tefach in the lulav kedei l'naneya. So we now know that a lulav has to be four tefachim. How to calculate these tefachim and whether they match the normal way we measure a tefach, I'll put aside. If there's extra time, we'll go there. But let's leave that aside for the moment. You need three tefachim plus a tefach kedei l'naneya. Says the Gemara, Amachloike Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan. Shmuel says that this tefach of the lulav has to stick up above the height of the hadasim. So if the hadasim are three tefachim, you need a fourth tefach in the lulav above the hadasim. Says Rabbi Shmuel, this fourth tefach can be everything from above the hadas all the way to the tip of the lulav. You have to make sure that you have a tefach there. Shita Shmuel. Says Rabbi Yochanan, no. Shmuel, you're wrong. That's not good enough. You need a tefach of shedre only, excluding the alim. Now, the definition of shedre is the point from which alim come out from the side. You have a shedre, you have alim coming out. Where there's no alim coming out anymore, shedre finishes. Even though you have the middle alim coming out, but where there's no side alim coming out, that's where shedre finishes. Says Rabbi Yochanan, you need a tefach of shedre above the height of your hadas. A tefach of shedra, that's where the fourth tefach has to be. So practically speaking, if there's a tefach of alin on top of your shedra, so your lulav is going to have to be five tefachim long. Five tefachim long, because the alin on top are not counted. The fourth tefach of the lulav over the shed, over the hadasim, is only in the shedra itself, excluding the alin. Is this clear? Fine. So you need a tefach of shedra. You need four tefachim before the shedra finishes. From the bottom of your lulav until the top of your shedra, you need four tefachim. If you have very long alim, they can go from here to the sky. That's not going to help your lulav. Your lulav has to be from the point where the shedra ends to the bottom of your lulav for complete tefachim. Now this in itself would still be okay. Most lulavim are like that. The only thing is this. The Ran comes along and says that when we say that you have to have four tefachim in your lulav, it's not saying that objectively a lulav has to measure from its bottom to the top of the shedra four tefachim. No! You actually have to have a protrusion of a tefach above your hadasim. So if you're going to have a hadasim of eight tefachim, you need a lulav that has nine tefachim of shedra. And even if you do have a lulav of nine tefachim of shedra, if you're going to put up your hadasim slightly higher, and it's going to go into the shedra space, it's going to pass through your lulav. So you think you're taking a chazanish hadasim, you're going to be machmer and mahadir, but it could be a chumash maybe they kula, because your hadasim are going higher, your lulav requirement grows with that, and that's why the Mishnah doesn't say four tefachim for the lulav. The Mishnah says three tefachim ukedei l'naneya. Kedei l'naneya means you have to have a freestanding tefach of shedre which is unaffected by the hadasim at all. Yeah? This is a very important halacha. This is a very important halacha because very often it's not the case. Very often.
It's not the minimum, is it?
What?
The tefach is a minimum.
A minimum tefach, and even it's smaller than a regular tefach. I don't want to go there right now, but ein chenami. But whatever the tefach is, has to be counted from the top of your hadasim. So you may discover that when you come yontif, that your hadasim need to be pulled down slightly underneath your ringlel or into your keshikol or whatever it is. You have to pull them down, or if it's before Yontif, you should cut off their bottom, not the top, but the bottom, so that you should remain with a tefach of lulav, of shedra, above your hadassah. I just want to tell you that the Rambam has a different shita, a very interesting shita in Pirush HaMishnah, is entirely different shat in the Mishnah. The Rambam says that when the Mishnah says kedei l'nanea, yeah, so the Gemara says kedei sheyetze halulav tefach, so that the lulav should stick out the tefach. Shehei lulav yoytze min hadas tefach, so that the lulav should go out of the hadas by a tefach. That's the Gemara. Rashi, when he quotes the Gemara, Rashi says kedei shehei lulav yoytze l'maylo min hadas tefach. So that word l'maylo is an addition of Rashi, unless Rashi had a different girsa. But he says kedei shehei lulav yoytze l'maylo, and that's the way all the Rishonim learn, all the place can learn. The Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayis, and perhaps even Sefer Ayad, the words in Sefer Ayad lend themselves to this pshat as well. The Rambam said that's not pshat in the Mishnah. When the Mishnah says kedei shehei lulav tefach, it actually means from the bottom. You want to use the lulav as a means of nianua, so you need a tefach to hold the lulav, and that's why you need an extra tefach. The nianua happens in the lulav even whilst it's surrounded by the hadassim. That doesn't bother me, says the Rambam. The extra tefach that's needed is for the sake of having a handle, so to speak, in the bottom tefach of the lulav. However, the other Rishonim don't learn like that. They learn that the lulav has to protrude outside of the hadassim, and that's where the nanua happens, and that's ma'akif. And that is ma'akif. We don't pass it like Shmuel. The Gemara says the klal is Shmuel and Abyechon, Allah Kadav Yechonon, which means none of the poskim say that you can count the alim. Everybody says only shedda. This is not subject to a machlekes poskim. Only shedda. The alim do not count at all. It's important to know how to identify where shedda finishes, and from there and down, you have to see. From the bottom, from the highest point of my shedra, where do my hadassim end? And your hadassim don't have to be more than 3 tefach. So your hadassim can come down so that you should have a tefach of actual shedra above your hadassim. So let's just summarize, Rabbi Yisai, let's just summarize what we've had over here. We have Niktam Roishoy is a Machlokes Machaber Ramo. According to the Machaber, which is the Shittas HaRif and the Shittas HaRambam, the Machaber says that in order to be possible as Niktam Roishoy, the majority of the higher leaves have to be compromised, have to be chopped off. It's not going to happen. You don't have to worry about the top, according to the Machaber. The Ramo says we see the middle one as being the Roish. We see the middle one as being the Roish. And that's not allowed to be niktam. And over there, there's a shita that says even b'mashu, and that's the halach, even b'mashu. And it was mentioned over here, I forgot your name, Reb Yankel mentioned correctly, that even though it says mashu in the poskim, but since it's a psul of hodor, it's logical, it makes sense to say that it has to be a mashu that's visible. That you can tell that there's something missing. It can be a minuscule amount missing, but you can identify that this lulav is missing something on its top. That's as far as correct, l'chayra. That's one psul. So the top, you have to be careful. When you're losing the lulav, you don't bang into the schach. And this is a psul of 8 days. This is not a psul of day number one, because it's a psul of hodo. Then we have nechlekah tiyomis, and once again, the machaber says tiyomis means the majority of leaves shouldn't be split into two. Each leaf is made up of two. They shouldn't be split. They should have that place where they come together as one. The Ramo says that the middle one on its own should also remain as one. And the Iker Adin is that its majority should be as one. So if you have even an inch, 2 inches, 3 inches, where the middle one was split, the lulav is kosher. Lulav is kosher, you don't have to panic. Lulav is kosher, even on day one. Lulav is kosher. It's only if it goes down the majority. Machmirim, lechatchilo, you should have, it shouldn't be at all compromised on top. This whole psul is only a psul for day number one. Literally, the middle leaf can be split into two all the way down to the shedra, and it remains a kosher lulav from day two onwards. So kosher lulav. It's a psul only for day one. You could use it, you can make a bracha, you don't have a problem. People you know, often come to me with a shayla on a lulav, and I say, I would make a bracha on it. I would make a bracha. The shayla of the tiyomis is not ma'akev day two on at all. And in day one, again, the mashu is only a din of machmirim. It's not mikra din at all. The third halacha, which we discussed today, is this din of the shedra. This is mi'ikradin. Mi'ikradin, the lulav has to stick out above the hadassim by a tefach. It has to stick out above the hadassim by a tefach, and that tefach does not include the alim. That tefach has to be measured against your subjective hadasin. It's not good enough that when you were in the shop, you measured four big modu de ketfachim above, you know, from bottom to top of the shedr. It has to be above your hadasin, and has to be made up of shedr as opposed to the exclusion of any of the alav.
That's why you call shiva.
Yes. That's the seder that feels dal gvina. That's the shir. Correct. Yeah, because hadasim are slightly higher than narav, so I'm using the term hadasim. Yeah. It has to be above both. This is not subject to a machlekes. This din of the shear of the luluf, this is a gemara. Allah k'rabi yechanan. We pass like Rabbi Yechanan. There's actually the gemara says, not only do we go with the klal of Shmuel, Rabbi Yechanan, Allah k'rabi yechanan, there's a stam of the gemara in Mesechet Nida that says, shidrei shel luluf is a tefach. So we're medayik from there that the gemara paskins dafke the shedra and not the alin at all. Okay, Rabbi Yisrael, k'sivach sima toiv, agud gemen shtior. Thank you.